A century ago, World War I was tearing the world apart. But at the same time, heavy corsets and oppressive metal and fabric body shapers were holding women's bodies together, in the Western world at least. Today marks 100 years since the patent of the first ever bra. Various breast cupping devices had existed as far back as the Greeks, but it was 1914 that the first mass-producible, lightweight, compared to the tonnage of a corset, was introduced. By the 1960s, bra commercials were little dramas about women's breast problems.
Ellen, I've got the solution.
Not a padded bra.
No, this is slightly padded.
Slightly padded?
Just a 1/16 of an inch lining. Adds shaping, not inches.
The new Playtex Cross Your Heart Slightly Padded Bra. Sometimes a little can do a lot.
That's a young Bernadette Peters starring in a Playtex commercial, a stepping stone to Broadway. Joining us now to discuss this century milestone of the bra is Patricia Mears, Deputy Director of the Fashion Museum at the Fashion Institute of Technology right here in New York City. Welcome.
Hello.
So the bra, and I'm not an expert. I mean, the things I'm an expert about regarding bras, we don't need to talk about here. But the bra was an engineering innovation.
Absolutely.
Right? What did it replace?
It replaced the corset, pretty much. The whole concept of separating the upper part of support for a woman's body versus cinching in the waist was something that dominated Western fashion for several centuries. And so what started to happen actually in the 19th century with greater technology and the growth of the amount of clothing people were wearing, the varieties of clothing, led to the separation of the corset, a top part versus the bottom part. And then by the early 20th century, the idea of eliminating the corset altogether gave rise to the need for a bra.
Now, culturally speaking, did women say, hey, you know, leave the lower part of me alone, all right? It's none of your business. Or did men stop paying attention to it? Or
no, quite the opposite. Actually, the golden age of corsetry and really lingerie was end of the 19th into the early 20th century. And it became very interesting because we start to see the women's movement, this push towards liberation and the idea of comfort, and also women who were participating both in sports and in the work environment looking for a greater range of comfort in their underwear, but also the rise of more sensuous and more beautiful, colorful, and decorous forms of lingerie. So you have everything from peignoirs to a variety of corsets coming into play in a woman's wardrobe almost simultaneously. But what really starts to happen in the early 20th century is that designers and fashion and aesthetics start to change. And we're looking at a leaner, more liberated body. And so the need for less structure is one of the things that help propel the desire towards this lighter weight, separate garment to support the bust.
So you've got loose fitting garments of one kind or another. You've got bras that satisfy a practical need to, in the workplace, basically keep you from, you know, having all sorts of distracting sort of motion problems, to use euphemisms there. And then that gradually evolves into a kind of a shaping to accentuate certain aspects, cleavage being one of them.
And
that's where we are today. I mean, Victoria's Secret is all about that.
Yes, exactly. But all these innovations come out of the late 19th century. That's what's so interesting, the use of metals, when metals were used and when they weren't used. But today is the 100th anniversary of a very particular kind of bra, a very soft cup bra made out of two handkerchiefs and a little bit of ribbon by a young socialite. She had to make it for a party. She didn't want to wear a corset underneath a rather diaphanous dress, so she came up with this homemade invention. Her friends liked it. She made some for them, sold a few, and eventually her husband sold the patent for it on this date 100 years ago.
Wow.
And so the sort of soft cup bra comes into play much more importantly during the interwar years of the 20s and 30s, but then again gets replaced as the corset and bullet bras come back into play in the 40s and 50s.
What was her name?
Well, it depends on which version. She was either Carice Crosby or Miss Mary Jacobs. So,
but she's the Helen Gurley Brown of basically underwear.
Exactly.
Oh.
But we wonder whether or not she was part of a larger group of women, both in the United States and Europe, who were coming up with their own homemade inventions.
Now, interestingly enough, the marketing of bras is all about a kind of sensuality.
Absolutely.
But in the 60s, and you heard the Bernadette Peters latex lift and separate
That's
thing.
Right.
It was all about solving the bra problem
yes,
that I have.
Exactly.
And, you know, it was a really serious problem. What were those problems?
Well, there really weren't any. I think one of the biggest problems is trying to stay au courant with fashion. You have these ideas of highly feminized or historicized styles in the 1950s, again, accentuating the bust, the tiny waist, the rounded hips. Then by the 1960s, women are dressing like little girls. So again, this idea of hiding one's curves becomes an issue. But the Bernadette Peters commercial is right on the cusp of that whole counterculture movement, when the idea not only of burning the bra in its relationship to feminism, but this idea of not wearing hardly any underwear at all, this true liberation in clothing, the changing of the dress codes that's really being propelled by young people. So all of this is going on hand in hand. So one wonders whether this is a ploy on the part of marketing and underwear manufacturers to gain traction, to tell you you have a problem.
What other sorts of fashion trends have come along with all of this? It's really an empowerment movement.
It is, but I think it's also a very, very close tie to this idea of following fashion. Again, in the early 20th century, there was a greater belief, even amongst leading designers, Paul Poiret, Coco Chanel, and Madeleine Vionnet, leading couturiers, who around 1907, 1908, 1909, were already starting to eliminate the corset. So from an aesthetic point of view, as well as a social point of view, there was a sense of empowerment, even amongst these powerful designers. But that starts to come and go. The 20s and 30s was a fairly liberated period for women's clothing. There was far less structure in what they were wearing, and so softer undergarments, including slips, were very important. But there's a big turnaround again right after the war, this revival, this sort of happy homemaker idea, or this very highly feminized style of clothing, brings back very structured girdles and bras. And so, again, you are looking at even women wearing crinolines again. So it comes and goes. And again, with the liberation movements that we start to see in the 70s, a lot of that's eradicated. I think what's interesting is to see the revival and interest in really sexy lingerie today over the past decade or so. Victoria's Secrets and even high-end marketers like Agent Provocateur, which is a very expensive version of that, have been making incredible inroads into fashion.
And you're talking about corsety-like sort of shaping.
Absolutely. And hearkening back again to that golden age, that Belle Époque period, when corsets and lingerie were so important and were part of this sexual vocabulary that we were seeing within women's lives at that time.
Now, when you say golden age, are there going to be lots of people out there going, what is she talking about?
I think probably.
Bras today retain this sense of being a necessary evil, and we still have a very strong sense of, you know, throw them in the trash and burn them.
I think it depends, again, on your viewpoint. I think the idea, though, that the bra or lingerie is part of a sense of empowerment for women, instead of covering up the body as we were entering the workforce in greater numbers probably 30, 40 years ago, the idea that you could be a sexual being within the workplace is sort of a position of power in the idea of some people.
So this 100-year-old patent moment has a little of the ambiguity and ambivalence of Columbus Day.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Love it, hate it. And I think it really, again, it depends on the changing mores and people's impressions of this. And a lot of it is generational, too. A lot of older women are kind of appalled by the idea that things like Victoria's Secrets could be such an important element within high fashion, as we're seeing in the eyes of some people, the deterioration of certain women's rights. So it's a very funny sort of tipping point.
Try having three daughters in the 21st century.
You're a braver man than I.
I'm stuck with it now. Patricia Mears, Deputy Director of the Museum at the Fashion Institute of Technology, thanks so much for a great discussion.
Thank you.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.